Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films The Woman King, Confess Fletch, and Beautiful Blue Eyes. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring LARPs. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I've been trying to ignore this for weeks with other things, and it's just keeps showing up in news with think pieces and articles that are being written and attention being brought to it. The whole quote-unquote controversy about The Little Mermaid. Now, if you're not following this, way back in 2019, when it was announced that Disney was going to remake The Little Mermaid as a live-action / CGI feature, which they're doing with everything they've got. They cast a girl named Halle Bailey, I think is her name. I keep wanting to say Halle Berry, but her name's Halle Bailey. And she's a black girl. And they cast her as Ariel. And people are like, oh, but what about it? She's supposed to have red hair. And how dare you break with tradition? A bunch of people complaining about that, which is asinine. Because, look, if you go back to the original Hans Christian Andersen piece, it is vastly different than the Disney version of The Little Mermaid. And if you're going to make the argument and say, my wife's redheaded, and this is the first time she ever saw herself represented on screen as a Disney princess, I'm like, you're exactly making the point. There are a bunch of little black girls out there in the world that it's going to be great to see a Disney princess. I know you got Princess and the Frog. I know that that exists, but that's not a high-level Disney princess. It's a big difference with the Little Mermaid. And then Little Mermaid's a fictitious character. Mermaids don't go out in the sun, so they don't have skin color that would be the same as humans. So to say that they're white or black or anything is absurd. It's a fairy tale, for crying out loud. But the thing that bothers me more about this than the people are making a big heyday about it is the fact that this isn't even a real controversy. This is a marketing trick. It's meant to get attention to the film. The same thing that's happened with The Rings of Power, with black hobbits and Latino elves and Indian dwarves. People are supposedly all up in arms about, but are they really? That's my question. I mean, oh yeah, you can find anybody to say something horrible online. I do not doubt that there are racist, crazy people out there that are upset that there's a Latino guy playing an elf. I'm sure they exist, but I don't think it's a well-held view by a lot of people. Same thing with the Little Mermaid stuff. I really don't think there's a whole lot of people that care that the Little Mermaid is black or white. I think what ends up happening is people putting this stuff together know at least there's going to be that tiny sliver of audience, and you're going to be, if you want to find something horrible, you can find it on the internet. It is out there. And you can take that person and then amplify their voices. And that's something to get attention. The same thing happened with Obi-Wan Kenobi. Remember that series? And then there was that woman who was playing, she's sort of like a former Jedi who's going after Obi-Wan Kenobi. And people were complaining about her because she was black. I guess, I don't even remember what that was about. But then they got everybody in the sci-fi community behind it. Same thing happened with Mad Max Fury Road when George Miller came out and said, oh, I think I guess I am doing a feminist movie. And then suddenly had these people, it's not feminist. Oh, it's a manufactured controversy. Ignore the haters. Nobody would think twice and even know who these people were if film Twitter and the film journalism didn't start putting spotlights on it and linking to these people's account and giving out their Twitter handles. All you're doing is magnifying the problem. Just ignore the racists out there. For example, if it's something like people have talked about, how should we have a female James Bond? And I've always said no. Because James Bond, the essence of James Bond, it's a very masculine thing. And if you go back and do a female spy, fine. Do an entire 009 series with a female secret and then make it your own. But don't do some goofy sort of stunt casting. But, you know, should we have a black James Bond? I don't know. Is he going to be good? If you've got a really good actor who's black to play James Bond, I'm all for that. Because what's funny is, like, with the Rings of Power, that Lord of the Rings series, I was at my eye doctor. And he asked me, because all my doctors know that I'm a film critic, so they're always asking me about my movies. He said, have you watched that Rings of Power? And I go, yeah, we talked about it. And, you know, this, well, you know, I thought maybe this was a little long, or, you know, it looks really good, and this sort of thing. I'm not known about it. Not at once did us even acknowledge any sort of racial makeup of the characters, because you know what? Most people don't care. Most people are just watching it for what it is. Yes, those people that are upset that there's a black Little Mermaid, you guys are racists and just back off. But all you people that are magnifying those voices need to shut up too. Just because you need to have something to post on a Wednesday on your website does not mean you need to stampede towards this and then put a spotlight on awful behavior. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I've got two movies I want to talk about. They have both appeared, I believe, at Toronto Film Festival, and now they're going to be coming out soon. The first one I want to play the trailer for is for My Policeman, and that is coming out in theaters on October 21st and on Prime on November 4th.
This love is all-consuming. I pity people who don't know what it feels like to be this in love. Come with me, just you and I.
He's trying to destroy our marriage.
No hiding, no lies.
You know nothing about being married to...
Stop!
Telling me what I'm supposed to think about it. To
the sea above. He was always in your life.
I'm not familiar with the story of this. I mean, I obviously I've seen the trailer, and it looks like, to me, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this looks like a very standard gay discovery romance where there's this guy in the, it looks like he's in the 50s or 60s, and he's married to a woman, and then he discovers that he has feelings for another man, and that turns into just interpersonal drama. And I mean, we've seen this story done a million times, and that's fine. You want to do another one? That's good today. You know, it's like any cookie cutter story. It's just, I feel I've seen this movie before. I think the biggest component of this, it's got Harry Styles playing one of the guys. And so, of course, you have all these, you know, gay moments with Harry Styles, which that guy has a pair of stones to do that at this stage in his career. Good for him, you know, saying, oh yeah, sure, I'll play. I don't know if he's gay or not. I don't follow the tabloids, but the fact that he's playing into that, that's good for him. And I think it's nice that we can have a mega pop star do that and have it not be controversial. With that said, the movie looks rather familiar. I'm sure it's good. You know, it looks like it's going to be fine. I don't know if it's going to be groundbreaking, though. That's just the thing. The next one I want to talk about is The Fabelmans, which is in theaters on November 11th in limited release and opening wide on November 23rd.
In this family, it's the scientists versus the artists. Sammy's on my team, takes after me.
What kind of movie are we gonna make?
You dismiss what he does. It's playful or imaginative. You could afford to be a little encouraging.
You can't just love something, you also have to take care of it.
It's more important than your hobby.
Can you stop calling it a hobby?
This is basically the Steven Spielberg semi-autobiography about him growing up in a family wanting to make movies and how he saw the world. And it did very, very well in Toronto. I'm a little worried about it because I think Spielberg's a master storyteller, but it could be too personal for him. And it could be too, I don't know, fairy tale-ish on its own in the sense, I mean, even if you watch the trailer, it feels like it's a hyper-real version of what he thought his life was like as a kid. Now, that he could pull that off. I mean, Spielberg's a fantastic director, and he knows how to handle this sort of thing. But is it going to be a great movie? I don't know. I'm curious to see it. I do get tired of movies about artists. I would just rather watch the art the artists make. So, but still, yeah, this is going to be one of the big ones for award season, so I'm looking forward to it in a couple months. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be reviewing The Woman King and Beautiful Blue Eyes. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the big one, or supposedly the big one this week. That is The Woman King. Viola Davis stars as the leader of an elite group of female warriors in 19th century Africa.
My king, the Europeans wish to conquer us. They will not stop until the whole of Africa is theirs. We must fight back for our people.
Aniska, you're asking me to take them to war.
War. Some things are worth fighting for.
This is supposedly going to top the box office this weekend. People are predicting pretty high numbers, like 16 million. And I've heard people compare it to something. It's like Braveheart or Black Panther. And I'm like, those are the most surface comparisons. Black Panther, because there are black people in it, I guess, in sort of this warrior African setting. I mean, Black Panther has freaking spaceships, for crying out loud. There are no spaceships in this movie. This movie takes place in like 1820. And it's based on a real group of warriors that were around for hundreds of years in Africa, in West Africa. They're called Agogi. And they are also known as the Dohemi Amazons, which is the region they were from. I mean, they weren't in Amazonians. But the Dora Milaje in Black Panther are based partly on the Agogi. So there's this weird connection to Black Panther. And that's just in the terms that they're based on. It has nothing to do with Wakanda or Vibranium or any of the superhero stuff. It's just there's an element of history that the Black Panther series has kind of based some of their characters on. But I don't think it's based on an actual true story, but it's about this warrior group that is trying to protect its kingdom. And when I say kingdom, I mean, we're not talking about like France. The kingdoms in Africa were a little bit smaller and much more rustic. And that's the thing. I mean, you don't have giant castles and that sort of thing for some of these characters. They live better than the peasants. Let's just put it that way. So that's about the connection that it has to Black Panther. And it's as close to something like Braveheart as, again, the sense that it's sort of this rustic era sword and sandal type of action movie where there's battles. And I mean, because Braveheart is wildly different. And part of it is because the main character really isn't even Viola Davis, who's the title character, you know, the Woman King. That's her title as the head of this army. It's more about this young woman who has just been brought into the Agogi, and she is learning sort of the ropes. And look, I mean, there's some really good acting in it. Viola Davis is always good to throw down. I mean, she's kind of one note with always just being overly serious. I'd love to see her do a wackety schmackety screwball comedy. But no, she throws down for this movie, and Lashana Lynch is in there too. She was, of course, in No Time to Die as the person who took over the 007 number, and then she's also in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the Captain Marvel stuff. And they do a good job. I mean, it feels like an authentically well-acted movie. And there's some decent action moments. I mean, they have battle sequences, and those are cool and well-choreographed. But there are some serious problems with this movie. Not the least of which is, you can't tell anything that's going on. They shoot this thing with everything backlit. And that's bad enough when you have your film populated with white actors, but it's all black actors because it's in Africa. And they're not just, you know, it's like you don't have like this mixed race type. They're very dark. Viola Davis has a very dark complexion. And so like that's kind of the whole thing, is they're all come from hundreds of generations of Africans. So there's no like mixing races here. So they're very, very dark complexion. And when you backlight everybody, you can't see much of what's going on in the shadows, because you need to light black people differently than you light white people. I know that that's controversial to say, but you do. And they don't effectively light the cast of this movie. It feels like you're watching a shadow puppet show at times, especially like the opening sequence. It takes place at night, where they sneak up on this group of slave traders who are, of course, from another kingdom. So there are a bunch of black people in that kingdom, and you can barely see what's going on, because of course they have all the fires behind them, and so everything's just kind of in silhouette. And even when people are inside talking, Africa's known for a lot of things, but one of them is known for having a lot of sun, but you see no sun in this movie. In fact, there's a scene where there's a battle sequence And nobody's lit by the sun because no matter what angle they're shooting, the sun's always behind shining into the camera. So you can't tell what's going on in the foreground. It's ridiculous. Some of the worst cinematography and most unnecessary cinematography in this movie. And it's just, it's kind of convoluted and boring and it's repetitive. It's like 2 hours and 15 minutes long and it shouldn't be. Ugh. I went to go see this and it was not very well packed. I mean, there were maybe about five people in there and I dozed off at one point. I will admit I was gone for about 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then somebody else fell asleep because I could hear them snoring for like the last hour of the movie. I'm like, this movie put asleep 40% of its audience. This is not going to make as much money as they think. So there's a lot of problems in this movie. And just a good cast and well-choreographed action can't save this unfocused script and quite dreadful cinematography. So I'm going to have to say this one kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Beautiful Blue Eyes. In Roy Scheider's final film, he stars as a New York policeman who believes his son's neighbor was one of the Nazis that killed his family during the Holocaust.
My parents, the whole family, he murdered them all.
My brother. My family.
Who murdered them?
That son of a gun on the stairway.
What's your name? I blew your head off right here.
This actually came out last week, and I find it interesting because it is Roy Scheider's final film, and what happened was there was a damage to the footage, and they were going to reshoot it, and when Roy Scheider was still alive, like 15 years ago, and they couldn't get it done before he ended up passing away. And so this movie sat around unfinished for like 15 years, and they finally were able to use AI technology and CGI to finish it. Now, I have an interview with the director and his son, who plays the younger version of Roy Scheider in this movie. I'll be playing that in the next segment, but let's just talk about this movie really quickly. I mean, it's a character piece, and it's a very direct study, and Scheider's good in it. I mean, he really is. I mean, he's kind of playing to his type, but he definitely takes it serious. He's not just slumming it. You know, sometimes you get these actors later in their career, and you can tell they're just sort of like collecting a paycheck, but you can tell that he's at least emotionally invested in this film, and that's good. There's some writing wrinkles in it, mainly with the character of the son. The relationship between the two of them, it gets very hostile very quickly, and it could have been smoothed out a little bit more. But I will say this, this thing has some interesting turns, and there are things that happen in this movie where you're like, oh, okay, I didn't expect that to happen, and that's pretty impressive. It's also getting to the point now where you can't make a contemporary Holocaust movie because, I mean, we have now moved so far from the Holocaust and so far from World War II, that most of the people have passed away. And even this movie, which I think was originally shot in 2007, 2008, takes place 10 years before it. So it takes place in the late 90s. So this character that Roy Scheider plays is in his, I guess, late 60s, maybe early 70s, you know, right around how old Roy Scheider was. But it's one of the last ones that kind of has that contemporary feel to it. But it's interesting to see. It's not perfect. It is hinging on the performance of Roy Scheider. But this movie has enough turns in the plot to make it an interesting watch. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next, I'll be talking with director Joshua Newton and his son, Alexander Newton, more about Beautiful Blue Eyes. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're going to continue talking about Beautiful Blue Eyes. It's in theaters now. I do interview Joshua Newton, who's the director here. And of course, this is an edited version. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and see the full interview, which is about 25 minutes long. And they talk about a lot of things, both he and his son. What's funny is 20, 30 minutes before I had my interview with these guys, Joshua sent me this article about this problem that they're having with Facebook. It was in Rolling Stone. And so that monopolizes a good chunk of the interview. Let's just hear what they have to say about this. You just sent me the link to the Rolling Stone article. Let's just jump there since I think that's probably most on your mind right now. They won't allow it to be advertised. Is that what's going on?
That's right. Basically, they banned us from advertising the movie and Alexander's song from the movie because of the title. because it contravenes their advertising policies on the issue of race, okay. of a person's race, because they seem to think that actually the title Beautiful Blue Eyes excludes people who don't have blue eyes.
And what we've been hearing, well, the word I've been hearing today is asinine. Not that I think I've heard a handful of times in my whole life, but I've heard it more today than I have ever before in my whole life, is the word asinine. And it is. It's incredibly foolish and stupid.
How much do you rely on online advertising for a film like this, something through social media?
It's everything. I mean, when you're an independent film, you don't have the budget for print advertising and billboards and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You're relying completely on these platforms that do have a monopoly. You know, you're relying completely on Facebook and Instagram. You know, that's where the audience are. It's a key component in this campaign.
Just to be clear, this was not something that was just a bot that kicked it off. This was an actual human beings reviewing it and then deciding.
Yes, indeed. Because what happens is that they have their algorithms to begin with, which actually pick things up. But then it's subject to review if you appeal, which is what we did. So it was reviewed by human beings, and the digital marketer came back with a note from Facebook that said, "This is our final decision," and you can't go anywhere after that.
Was the term "beautiful blue eyes"? Where did that initially come from?
The title refers to the eye color of a child who perished at the hands of the Nazis.
Exactly. So it's the eye color of a Jewish child in the film. It's a statement that really says, like, well, anyone can have blue eyes, which is the truth. Anyone can have blue eyes. It's just an eye color.
I don't want to focus 100% on that because I also want to talk about the elements of the movie.
Of course.
You originally did release this, about 11 years ago?
I edited together a structure for the film that was completely different to my original script. The reason why I had to do that was because Roy had sadly passed, and there were a couple of scenes that were critical to that structure that had been compromised by a camera fault. And so there were these streaky lines, vertical lines going right across the screen. So I just edited the film completely differently. I was never happy with the original edit. It was very non-linear, right? So it was chopping backward and forward between past and present, past and present, past and present, to kind of overcome the missing bits.
Yeah.
And it still won a couple of awards. But at the end of the day, because Roy had died, the film itself no longer had that commercial hook of Roy Scheider. Without him to promote the film, the offers were limited. But, you know, I always run with my gut. And my gut said, no, you know what? Put your artistic hat to one side. I said, as much as I would like the accolade now, the reality is there will be a time in the future, at some point, when technology will be able to fix the problem. Yeah. And the distribution model will be entirely different. So we put it to one side. And then 18 months ago, actually because of COVID.
Yeah.
And so we thought, you know what, this is absolutely the right time, especially because the technology is now, the cost of the technology has actually come down enormously. And so I took the film apart. Basically, I re-post-produced it, started from scratch, was able to follow exactly as I had envisaged in my original script. And the technology managed to repair those damaged scenes. And you just wouldn't know. It looks like, you know, it looks like, in fact, the whole film looks like new because we applied that technology to every frame in the movie. And so it actually looks like a contemporary shot movie, essentially.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about this. And it's terrible what's going on with it, but it's also great that it's getting out there. And, you know, congratulations on finally wrapping up the full story.
Thank you so much.
Go to fatguysatthemovies.com. You can find the full interview there. And like I said, it's about 25 minutes. And they do go in a lot more in depth about their feelings and their thoughts about especially this kerfuffle with Facebook. And Joshua is quite upset. And he kind of goes very anti-woke at one point. I'm very reticent to use words like woke or political correctness because these terms get co-opted in political senses. And really, you sort of need to back out of it from a political sense. Because, like, I grew up in the 90s with political correctness. As a kid, as a young kid in the 70s and 80s, it was just politeness. Because it's not right to joke about handicapped people or racial jokes or stuff like that. You have to have decorum and just general politeness and consideration is what political correctness is. And then at times it kind of goes and spirals out of control. And I saw that happen in the 90s to a great degree. And the sort of the woke discussion is kind of the same thing. It's okay to be politically correct and it's okay to be woke as long as you're not stupid or you don't take it too far. And in this sense, as you heard them talking about the fact that they can't use the name of the movie because it, I guess, presupposes a racial component. I mean, look, if they had named the movie Hitler Was Right or something like that, which they wouldn't because that's not what it's about, I can understand Facebook saying, okay, we can't put that as a title, but it's just everyone's so hypersensitive. In particular, Facebook, because all the misinformation that came out, especially during the presidential campaign in 2016 and then into COVID and everything, there was so much misinformation and Facebook got caught up in that, that they, I think they've kind of gone overboard and just taking anything that anybody has any kind of complaint whatsoever about and banning it. And I don't think that that's good either. It's okay to be politically correct. It's okay to be polite. It's okay to be woke and be aware that other people than you have different experiences. That's actually a good thing. Like trigger warnings. I know some people get all upset about trigger warnings. You know, I think it's silly to have some trigger warnings. There was a movie I reviewed a couple months ago called Not Okay. And the trigger warning before that movie was, this movie has an unlikable protagonist. And I'm like, really? That you need a trigger warning for that? That's kind of taking it too far. But if there's sexual assault in a movie, I don't think there's a problem at least letting people know that, especially if it's a movie that wouldn't have it. Now, like, if you're going to go watch a Serbian film, well, you're watching a Serbian film. That thing's notorious for being offensive. But, like, there's a movie from the 90s called Rob Roy, which is a great movie, but it has this graphic rape scene in the middle of it. And I remember seeing it kind of going, whoa, where'd that come from? So, I mean, a trigger warning before that, I think, that's appropriate, because if somebody has been sexually assaulted, I mean, to somebody who hasn't, you're like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal, but you have, and having to watch that, you may not want to, and that's okay to be aware if there's something that could cause a problem to you. The extremes are where there's the problem, because this is not a left or right issue. On one hand, you've got a movie that's anti-Nazi, that's anti-Holocaust, and it's getting banned. And then at the same time, government agencies that are banning the discussion of racial tensions because it might make people feel uncomfortable. No, the American history and the history of the whole planet has a lot of uncomfortable things in it. And if you're going to teach and learn about history, you're going to have to face that stuff. We have to look at the fact that there was a Holocaust and that thing happened less than 100 years ago. So it is in recent history. And same thing with slavery, same thing with racial rights, same thing with the Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre, same thing with Emmett Till, same thing with a lot of stuff that's going on, even in our contemporary society. And movies and art are the way you confront a lot of that. Just don't be an idiot. And that's the big thing. That's my message. Don't be an idiot. Coming up on Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, I'm going to be talking about Confess Fletch and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring LARPs. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews and talk about Confess Fletch. Private investigator Irvin Fletcher tries to track down an art thief while clearing his name on a murder suspicion.
Earl Maurice Fletcher?
Who killed this young woman?
I think the victim interrupted an art theft.
Your fingerprints are on the murder weapon, and someone matching your description was seen with the victim. Come back with me to police headquarters.
I get it. You want my help? Okay.
Hey, guys, this is the way we can call in a coffee order, a kill for a macchiato. Not literally.
I looked into your criminal record.
And?
You're a bit of a shady character, Mr. Fletcher.
But I am adorable.
I've never read the Fletch books. I never have. And I know people who've read all of them. I never have. But I did see the Chevy Chase movies back in the 80s, both Fletch and Fletch Lives. And I know they wanted to continue. It kind of blows my mind in this day and age, you know, when you have, whatever, 30-some Marvel movies that were made in sequence. And you go back to the 80s, how long it took them to make a sequel? You could have made an entire series. If that Fletch movie had gone nowadays with Chevy Chase at the same level he was then now, if you had a young Chevy Chase making those movies, there would be about 15 Fletch movies, and then he probably would have continued them on some streaming service. But they're trying to bring it back, and they've got John Hamm playing Fletch, which actually, I got to say, it's a stroke of brilliance putting Hamm in these movies. I think John Hamm is arguably a better comedic actor than a dramatic actor. I mean, I've seen him in dramatic stuff, and he's okay. I've watched Mad Men. I mean, he's fine in that. He's good. I mean, he's good. He's a good actor. But I really think that the standout performances, even though I didn't like the movie Bridesmaids, I thought he was hilarious in it. He was also in that movie Absolutely Fabulous. He was hilarious in this tiny little part. And you know those progressive ads that he's in where like he was like dating Flo? Oh my God, those are hilarious. Those are strokes of brilliance. And I think John Hamm, he can really ham it up. So, yeah, let's throw that one out there. I'm sure no one's made that joke ever in the history of film or his life. But he was the perfect choice to play Fletch. And he doesn't try to ape Chevy Chase in this one. He just doesn't try to redo the same thing. He makes Fletch his own. It's not as big of a movie. I mean, it's in theaters and VOD right now. So it's kind of that hybrid release, but it was never going to be a big, huge blockbuster release. And I think part of that, the script is a little TV movie-ish. And that's what you get with, I mean, that's what Pulp Fiction is. That's what these sort of mysteries are. There's a reason why, if you go on BritBox, you can find 500,000 versions of Agatha Christie novels. Pulp Fiction works, and it works on that sort of episodic thing. And you don't need to spend $30 million on a movie. And I'd love to see much more Fletch movies with John Hamm, because he's funny. He walks you through what is actually a pretty horrifying scenario of murder. And he's kind of clever in it. And he's snarky enough, but he takes it seriously enough. And you got a good supporting cast. You got Roy Wood Jr. playing the police detective. You've got, oddly enough, John Slattery, who worked with him on Mad Men, being his old editor, where he's sort of pumping for information. And you know what's funny is there's a guy, and I forget his name, but I recognize it because he plays a security guard at this yacht club that this part of the thing takes place in. And I couldn't place the voice. And then I realized it's Gene Belcher from Bob's Burgers. And it's this guy, he's a normal man, but it's not this like 10-year-old chubby kid with dark hair playing a Casio keyboard, but it's Gene Belcher. And I think that's kind of cool. So the story is actually, it's cute. It's clever. It's not fantastic. It's a little bit rocky, and it's just that the mystery feels kind of like just a rote mystery. It doesn't feel big. And that's always been a problem with movies. Like, you know, Murder on the Orient Express or Death on the Nile, which they did just this last year. Those are big, sweepy movies with big, huge casts. But this feels a little bit more like a Murder, She Wrote episode. In terms of the complexity of the story and in terms of how much needs to happen. But I'm okay with that. I found it. I enjoyed it. I probably, of all the movies this week, I like this one the best. You know, it's clever and it's fun. And it's cute. You know, it's not as iconic as the Chevy Chase movies from the 80s, but John Hamm settles in for a fun ride in this snarky vehicle. I'm going to say that Confess Fletch kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I used this term once to a friend of mine in radio. I said I took a deep dive into Tubi. And he's like, what the heck does that mean? He said it almost sounded dirty. There's so many streaming services out there, you know, and it's just kind of hard to keep them all straight. But one of my favorites is Tubi. And it's completely free. Now, Tubi has, like, big-name movies showing up on it. I mean, they're not, like, the biggest stuff that comes right out, but after a couple of years, they have some big movies popped. I think I saw Great Gatsby was on there at some point, the one with Leonardo DiCaprio. But they also have a lot of TV series, and they have a lot of obscure stuff. Usually, if you can't find something, you can find it on Tubi. If it's available on streaming, it's on Tubi. I talked about Electric Dreams a couple weeks ago. That's where I found it on Tubi. They've got the Shout Factory sends a lot of their stuff over there, and it's ad based, so you're gonna have to deal with ads. I live tweeted Slithus or Spawn of Slithus last week with a bunch of friends online, and that is a bonkers movie. That's got to be up there for my Halloween reviews this year. But one of the series I stumbled upon, and that's the thing, is you can find some really, really weird and obscure stuff. And some things you'll find are like actually web series that they've packaged as TV series. And that's what I found here. It's a series called LARPs. A group of live action role players in Montreal deal with interpersonal issues both in the game and in their real lives.
Oh man, when do we start?
I just don't understand why you guys still have to be lovers. It's unnecessarily awkward.
But the love of an elf lasts forever, or something.
It's only gonna get harder the longer you wait. I know, but truth be told, I'm having way too much fun.
You do what you want in your own LARP, Mia. You wanna be cruel? Go right ahead.
It's not about cruelty. It's about raising the stakes.
A little fighting warms the blood.
First of all, LARPs are a little more accessible in this day and age of cosplay, but some people still don't know what it is. Role-playing games are where you play a character through a game. You know, like Dungeons & Dragons is a great example of role-playing, where you play an elf or whatever, and the dungeon master describes where you're going. You got to make decisions, and you do it based on dice and stuff like that. Live-action role-playing is people will actually go, and they will go out. Well, like if it's a medieval type thing, like a Dungeons and Dragons type thing, they'll go out in the woods and they'll have to go down a path, or they come to a barn and they have to find something, and they have these foam swords that they can fight with. I had a friend, oh gosh, about 20, 30 years ago, who was really heavily into LARPing, and I didn't quite understand it at the time. I referred to it as the fantasy militia, where they basically practice just in case orcs invaded, they'd have all the swords and equipment and know how to stop them. But it's a very immersive thing. And some people take it very, very seriously, where they don't break character and they only speak in an accent or anything like that. And this is just a story of these LARPers. And the thing that drew me to it, just because I thought it was interesting, and they're like 10 minutes long episodes. So I was like, well, that's an easy thing to, you're at the end of the night, you're ready to lay down, but you want to watch something else. And you don't want to watch a whole hour show. So you watch, 10 minutes of LARP. And I kind of got into it. And then the first season is just sort of their interpersonal relationships as they're developing this game, but they sort of do an overarching story in the second season. Now this show's like 8 years old or something like that. And I guess they're still trying to put together season 3. But first of all, what I love about it is it has a love for this sort of geek atmosphere. It's coming at it by people who actually role play. It's not somebody out there making fun of them. And that goes a long way. But they know what they're doing, and they can speak the language, and they can tell the jokes, and people can understand. And if you've ever role played or LARPed, you know where they're going with this, and you know the personalities you run into, and they really are just a bunch of nerds. They're my people. So yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. And then in the second season, they really sort of enrich the characters, and they have this sort of overarching conflict between all of them. And the real life stuff mirrors what's going on in the game. It's not overly intricate, but there's a little bit of intelligence behind this too. It's really neat. I mean, if you're not a nerd, don't bother. But if you're either a nerd or a geek or you have somebody close to you who is, and you've ever dealt with anybody who's done role playing or live action role playing, check this out. It's on Tubi TV. It's free. And like I said, there's 2 seasons, but it's probably like 2 hours worth of content total because they're all short episodes. But I'm going to have to say, it's made with true love of role-playing and geekdom. This cosplay sitcom is breezy and fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available on disc this week, we have Where the Crawdads Sing, Luther Season 6, The Fog in 4K, Elvis, and Lightyear. And that's it. Next week, I'll be coming back talking about Andor and Don't Worry, Darling. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.